Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to be having a nice little discussion and showing you how to build a cross-platform RPG today.
In HTML5 and JavaScript. It's going to be the languages and formats that we're going to be dealing with.
That's very cool. So let's get right into the introductions. So first off, my name's Mickey McDonald. I'm an indie game developer and technical evangelist with Microsoft. So in my day-to-day work, I basically get to go out and chat with other indie developers. I get to, you know, show them off cool tech, see what they're working on, as well as I get to go out and do a lot of speaking engagements and stuff like that around the community.
And my name's Brian Griffiths. I'm a software engineer and game developer. I've worked on various projects, AAA and indie and everywhere in between, mobile, PC, all the consoles. And as well, I'm an instructor for Trios College up in Canada, doing video game design and development, teaching calculus and physics and all those fun topics, as well as all the different languages and utilities and engines that we deal with on a day-to-day basis.
So I can speak from experience. He's quite a good teacher. He actually taught me a lot of what I know. So
former student of mine.
Yes. So let's take a look at what we're going to be working with today. So today, like Brian said, we're going to be building an HTML5 JavaScript RPG. So these are basically a breakdown of what we're going to be looking at. So first we're going to go through getting started, so our setup, getting everything in place and getting our project up and going. We're going to take a look at installing Cordova, which is the framework we're going to be using. We're going to take a look at, you know, importing our libraries that we're going to be using today as well. And then, yeah, we'll jump right into, you know, creating a player, adding collisions and status screens.
All those fun things.
All the fun things that you need in an RPG. So by the end of it, you'll pretty much have a fully working RPG that you'll be able to play with.
And in case there's anybody really new, RPGs, role-playing.
Yes, thank you for pointing that. Yeah, yes.
Too many acronyms early in the morning, you know, sometimes not good.
Exactly. Well, you know, and we basically chose an RPG because, like I was saying with Brian, I got into game design to basically tell my story, right? I had a story in mind of what I really wanted, and I wanted to be able to tell that story. And one of the best genres for telling a story is an RPG. So that's kind of why we picked this. Is, you know, there's a lot of us out there that have got these ideas in the back of our heads, really want to bring them, you know, out to the public, but, you know, maybe don't have the framework in place. So by the end of the day, we'll have that framework.
Yeah, role-playing games, I mean, you get a lot of depth to the character development if that's what you want to focus on. You can have a lot of exploration if that's what you want to focus on. Battle mechanics, combat, whatever really you want to expertise or show off or play around with or just learn a little bit more. There's so much to do in a role-playing game. It stretches beyond, you know, just simple mechanics like a first-person shooter or something like that. So that's why we sort of picked it as a good base to work with and to look at so that anybody can then go from there and take it in whatever direction they feel, you know, fits the story they want to tell or develop themselves and play around with.
Yeah. Very cool. So our target audience and basically what we're expecting from you is we're looking to basically target the beginner to advanced developers, those that have had a little bit of experience maybe with JavaScript or other languages, kind of know a little bit about programming, and are looking to basically build a cross-platform RPG.
Right, very important part nowadays is getting it out, getting it visible across as many platforms as possible. So, you know, you can make the biggest splash that is possible as soon as possible. Sometimes you can only focus on developing it on one thing and then, you know, it does okay and you spend even more time to push it to the next platform and the next platform and the next platform, and it just extends the life of the project. You burn out a little bit. You never really get that big splash, and if you do on one platform and the next, it doesn't bleed over and sort of, you know, snowball into that critical mass of users that you really want in a game. So trying to get a nice cross-platform system right off the go means that you can launch quickly. You know, whatever advertising oomph you put behind it or social media that you do, it works across all the platforms because you're ready to go. You don't have to do the same thing three or four times or come up with a new way to advertise it every time. So
yeah, cross-platform is very, very important nowadays, definitely.
Yes. That's right.
So, you know, we expect a little bit of game design knowledge, so at least, you know, kind of know the core concepts behind building a game and what's involved in that. Again, like I mentioned, so a little bit of experience with JavaScript wouldn't hurt. As well as if you're looking for some porting material, a really good book that we highly recommend is the Web Game Developers Cookbook. This book is really, it's structured more towards the beginners and the advanced. It's set up as like kind of like recipes.
So, that's right. It has pieces that you could take and just include into whatever you're doing, small demonstrations that work with it. And it's not just for RPGs. There's multiple genres in there, so you can take a look at it and play around with things in different ways. But it is very, put forward very straightforwardly, and you can go ahead and take a little piece, build up with it into whatever you want, and then branch out whenever you feel comfortable in whatever direction. So it's a nice book to have, you know, to utilize and to refer to, and that's why it's a recipe book. You can just snipe little pieces out of it and drop it in, yeah.
Yeah, and he targets a lot of the different genres, right? There's like RTS in there, which is real-time strategy. He's got, you know, the shooters, like your, you know, Call of Duties or whatever it might be.
In HTML5.
Yes.
Not saying AAA.
Yeah, exactly. So it's definitely a good book to check out. Highly recommend it. Okay, so a little bit about the MVA community. Hopefully you know what the MVAs are, considering you're watching this as an MVA. But a little bit of news around that is, for those of that don't really know what the MVAs are, they're basically online tailored courses for IT and developers, basically to show off cool technology and how to implement it. And it's a really cool thing. I've learned a lot just from watching some of the MVAs and stuff that I'm not, you know, versed in, right? Because I spend a lot of my time in the gaming world. It's nice to branch out and see what's going on in, you know, big data or cloud or...
Yeah, there's a lot of breadth of topics, which is nice, too.
Yeah, lots of good stuff there. So while you're watching this, you can actually earn 50 MVA points for just watching this event, as well as we have a voucher. If you see here down at the bottom, if you go and enter this code, you can use that as your MVA voucher. Okay. So... good intro. Let's dive in and take an actual look at, you know, getting started with all this. So for this module, we're going to do a quick overview of how to set up your environment. We'll take a look at installing Cordova, as well as installing our game libraries and new plugins that we're going to be using as well. So what you need to get started. All right, first off, Visual Studio 2013. Now we're using the Ultimate version.
Yes, I think.
But Pro or Premium, even Express will work. I tend to suggest using Ultimate, especially if you're new to Visual Studio. It's got all the bells and whistles in it, so it kind of gives you a chance to get your feet wet with the IDE and kind of learn all of its ins and outs.
Right? And it does provide you with some visual assistance, a little bit easier, just to help you with the, you know, the details and things like that. So there are, yeah, definitely features that Express doesn't highlight or have right away that Ultimate, and that can be very useful for a beginner.
Yeah, I tend to always go for the highest SKU of something and then work my way down as I don't need things.
Right? Yeah, but once you don't want it like trying to help you, then you know you can roll exactly. Back maybe if you really want to just, you know, Express. It'd be like using command line.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so after you got Visual Studio installed, the next thing you're going to need is Apache Cordova. In this case, we're using 3.5.0. So for those that don't know what Cordova is, basically the best way to explain it is it's a platform that allows you to do cross-device development and basically abstracts away all the heavy hardware stuff. Yep. So for the phones and stuff like that, it gives you access to the phone camera, to the memory, to sensors and stuff like that without having to write platform-specific code. Right. So the way I usually explain it to it is we're going to build a website and Cordova is going to sit on top of that and serve it up for us.
Good.
All right, so after we have Cordova, we're going to use Enchant. So Enchant is the game library that we're going to use.
Right.
It's a very simple, very easy to use library, very feature rich, actually.
Yeah, there's a lot in there that you can take advantage of to build specifically this type of game as well.
Yeah, so it's geared more towards the RPGs. You could build any game that you want with it. It seems to be a little bit more geared towards the RPGs. Yeah. I liked it because it was very intuitive and easy to get up and
you
running.
You can tell that by the name Enchant.
Enchant, yes, exactly.
Sounds very, you know,
very RPG-ish. Yeah. Yes. Okay, because we're going to be building for the Windows Phone today, that's the device that we're going to actually be targeting, we're going to need to have the Windows Phone SDK installed. So if you don't have Ultimate or Premium and you just use Express, you're probably going to want to go out and download the phone SDK and install that as well. If you do have the either Ultimate or Premium, it comes at already built in, so you won't need that. And of course, Windows 8, right? That's what we're using to build everything. It's pretty much the standard OS for us now when we do all these demos. So that's basically, you know, 8.1 is fine. We're actually using 8.1 on our devices to show you this. And you're going to need a Windows developer account because at the end of the day, the goal is to get this into the store, publish it, right?
That's the most important part.
It seems to be the
show it off. You got to publish it, get it out there, let people play with it, get some feedback, expand it, you know.
I know from personal experience that tends to be the hardest part is to actually push it out and let other people see it.
Everybody wants to make the game, but then I don't want to, you know, have to like put it in there, type a small description about what it is. You know, just play my game. It's great. I don't want to have to do all that last minute stuff. Yeah. You should do it. I mean, it's rewarding once it's out there and you get to see it in somebody else's phone or on the store or something, or that you hear conversation about it. I mean, the first time I ever heard somebody talk about a game that I had worked on, it just, you peek up and it makes it feel worthwhile and things like that. So it is a great experience, and you can only have that really if you publish it and get it out there, because otherwise it's just, you know, you're giving it to your friends or your mom or whatever, and it's not the same thing. But when you hear a stranger talk about one of your games that you made or worked on or helped with, it's a whole different experience that you know it really, really hits you in the core. I'm getting teary-eyed. It's great. It's a great feeling.
It really is. Then that's one of the major pieces of advice that I give new developers, right, when they come up to me and they're like, you know, what's the number one thing that I should do before I go out and try to find a job in the industry? And I always say to them, publish a game. Right?
Yeah.
It's one thing to have a portfolio. It's another thing to actually have something in the store.
Right. I mean, there's not a lot of difference between you and me when we entered the industry and stuff like that. But that has been a critical turning point. And that's why we're doing these kinds of MVAs, to get people started so they can get something published and get it out there. Because just having a portfolio or a couple of prototypes or whatever you did in college or university and things like that, it just doesn't cut it anymore. The game developers, they want to see, you know, published and shipped titles if you have them. That's the first number or the first stat that, you know, we're all gamers, the first stat that they're most inclined to look at. And if you can show them three or four things on their device that they got right when you met them, wherever you met them, then that's a huge boost. They know you're competent. They know you can go through all the steps from beginning to end. They know you've had experience with all the different stores that you've showed it on, right? And that's a lot of training. That's a lot of exercises and work that they don't have to worry about imparting on you now. You have it. You have that information. And it's something that a lot of programs, universities, schools, colleges, all that kind of stuff don't dive into. There's no course about publishing on this platform, that platform, whatever. It's sort of left to you to go do it yourself. So again, publishing is very important nowadays. It is relatively easy nowadays. You got lots of devices and stores to choose from, and there's no reason why not to go that extra couple steps. I know it feels tiresome by that point because you've been working on all these bugs and crushing out this game, but you just got to get it done. And it is very, very helpful to your career if that's what you're looking to do, you want to get into.
Yeah, and to that point, publish on everything, right? At the end of the day, push it to everything that you can get it out on. It's just, it's better publicity. More people see it, you know.
Well, how do you know when you're applying what that person's going to have, right?
Exactly.
You meet people at conferences. You meet people at game events. There's tons of game jams going on now. And even AAA companies, they will send their, you know, employees to game jams just to watch people playing and building a game on the fly under crunch time, and those people will get interviews after the event and things like that. It's a great way to get in. And right away, they'll be like, oh, well, you want to see something else I've worked on while you're just talking to them? Here, just what kind of phone do you have? Let me fire up something that works on that. What kind of tablet you have? Let me fire one up on that for you. Right? If you can just pump out 1, 2, 3 different examples.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
You're going to the next level right there. So you want to have that presence. In all my students, well, you know this, I even say if, you know, people search for you on the internet and you're not the top 3 links, then you don't have enough of a presence yet for some companies. They just won't even, you know, They'll just move along and look for the next guy. Yeah. Now, it's unfortunate because some of us have famous names of other people and so on. and you got to work that extra mile. And some of us get really lucky and there's no combination out there and you're good. You're the only guys, but or a girl, and it doesn't matter. But that's always something, another thing to look for. So publishing is important and doing this.
I'm thinking of a certain dog when people go to search for your name.
Yeah. Peter Griffin, Brian Griffin, yeah, yeah. And so on and so on. My wife also gets that because she's a redhead.
Yes.
Can we call you Lois? So.
Very cool. Great advice, though. It really is. Okay, so that's what the course is going to be about. This is the things that you're going to need. So let's go right in and take a look at actually installing the Cordova framework into our Visual Studio.
Yep. Step one.
So obviously, first thing you need to do is download Apache Cordova. I put up the link here, and obviously this link will be available for you to download from. Like I said, again, we're using 3.5. So we're basically looking for this specific file. Once you have it downloaded, we're going to go ahead and extract it to a folder that you can find. And I always say that you can find because a lot of people just extract it and they don't know where it goes and then they spend 10 minutes trying to find it. So try to extract it somewhere you're going to actually be able to find it. And then afterwards, you're going to navigate to your folder where Cordova is extracted. We're going to create some templates that we're actually going to use to pull into Visual Studio. And basically, I'm going to walk you through that step by step. It'll be a little easier than reading it off of the slides here. So let's go ahead and jump over to my desktop. And you'll notice on my desktop here that I've got my folder somewhere where I can find it. If I go ahead and open this up, you'll notice down in here, just about halfway down, I've got a...
You might want to zoom in there for file names and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if I can zoom in on this right now. I don't have Snagit set up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have it set up so I can zoom in. But yeah, about halfway down, you'll see a batch file called Create Templates. So if we double-click this, it's going to go ahead and open up our command line. And basically, it's going to build out some template files for us that we can then import into Visual Studio.
And it just drops them right in that folder.
Yeah,
that
drops them right there in that folder. So we have one for WP7, which is Windows Phone 7. And we also have one for Windows Phone 8. So we're going to actually use the Windows Phone 8 one. But if you did want to build for Windows Phone 7 as well, you could copy this over and it'd be the same process. So once we have that, we're going to go ahead and I'm going to copy this. And now I'm going to go into my Documents folder. And inside my Documents folder, I have Visual Studio 2013.
Okay.
If I go inside there, you'll notice at the very bottom here, I have templates.
Yep.
So I double-click that. I go into Project Templates. And I'm just going to paste my Cordova compressed files.
Right. So now we can see them from Visual Studio.
That's basically the steps that we've taken to go ahead and install the template inside of Visual Studio.
Good old drag and drop.
Yeah, very simple, right? So that was pretty easy, pretty painless.
Yep.
So our next step, that's the demo of showing it. Let's go ahead and take a look at, now we're going to build the project. So we'll create the original project, our template.
Right.
And then we'll take a look at actually bringing in our game files. So our game library, Enchant, and any plugins that we need as well as that.
Okay.
So I'm going to jump back into my desktop yet again. And here I have Visual Studio open up and ready to go. So I'm going to go up to the top here to File. I'm going to go down to New, select Project. Now this might seem a little confusing because we said we're building in JavaScript.
Right, why are we in Visual Studio?
Well, you can still write JavaScript in Visual Studio.
Not everybody knows that. I mean, there are a lot of...
It's a good point. Yes.
Right, web development's been around, JavaScript's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
They might not even be aware of that.
Yeah. There is an option here so you can build JavaScript. So you could build native JavaScript applications right inside here using the WinJS library.
Right.
But what we're doing is we're actually using Cordova so that we can have this cross-platform build.
Okay.
So Cordova's template's actually Visual C. So if we go down to Visual C Sharp and we select our dropdown, we can actually scroll down here, and if we scroll down far enough, we'll come to Cordova WP8_3_5_0.
Right, so that's the one we dragged in just a minute ago.
Yeah, exactly. So if we select that, you'll notice now that we have Cordova highlighted over here.
I like that logo.
Isn't that a cool little logo?
Gamers definitely made that.
Yes, definitely. And we're going to just give this a name. So in our case, I've just been calling it RPG. So let's call it RPG. Oh, apparently I've hit caps lock somehow and set that to auto come on. There we go. So just create it, RPG, yep. Hit OK. It's going to actually build our project. So let's give it a couple of seconds here.
Make some sound effects, because that's what we do.
Kind of feel like we should have the cooked turkey type thing here, right? So I just pull the cooked turkey out
and
of the...
And magically, the TV we have, dinner.
So there we go. It built out our basically default project. So you'll notice here, most of this is in XAML and C#, but we're programming in JavaScript, so right. It might seem a little odd, but if we open up the www folder, so the World Wide Web folder.
Of course, yes, yep.
You'll notice that we now have JavaScript, and it's pretty much laid out like how you would lay out a web app.
All right, so what happens if we open up that JS file there?
We open up the Cordova JS. This is Cordova's library, so it's going to have a lot of stuff in it.
Right.
But as you can see, we can see it, we can edit it right inside of Visual Studio.
Not recommended in this case. Don't play around with Cordova.
Yes, don't play around with the specific file. You might break something and then have a lot of troubles down the road.
Yes.
But yeah, basically, you know, we can open it up, edit it inside, work on all the files.
We know it's been set up right at this point,
exactly,
by verifying that it's there.
Why don't we actually verify that one step further, and I'll fire up the emulator.
Okay.
And we can actually see what Cordova, like a basic Cordova template looks like.
Building, building, building.
And this is connecting to our emulator. Yeah. So, you know, we were talking about cross-platform and stuff.
Right.
So what would be, why would we want to do it this way as opposed to, say, just building it in WinJS or, you know, building it without Cordova?
Well, I mean, there's multiple reasons. If you do WinJS, I mean, some people might not be comfortable with that because they came from a background of HTML previous versions and JavaScript all the way back, and WinJS is slightly, you know, has slight differences.
So targeting more the web developer style.
Right, so they could move forward with this and feel a little more comfortable, but still reach all the platforms again.
Yeah, and like we said before, it abstracts the hardware as well, right? So we can access things like the camera, the gyroscopes, and all that without having to do purely native code, which wouldn't make this very portable if we wanted to, say, take it to a different device. We'd have to rewrite all that code, right? So that's the big thing about Cordova for me, is it's really abstracting a lot of that heavy lifting for me and making it easy, you know, to get things up and running and being able to just take this, like, literally and drop it onto another device or even into the web, as we'll see later. You can just drop this right into the web and it works, right? There's nothing...
That's right. There's no underpinnings or rewriting or if def out, you know, special code and so on. You just... It's ported automatically. Basically, because it's not ported, it's just ready to work on everything anyways, and you move forward.
Yeah, I don't even know if I'd call this porting, really, because you're building it on the platform, and the platform is...
Taking care of the rest. It's like building something in, you know, Java or something else, basically, that runs on everything. It's meant to do that. It's already a platform that you're standing on that, you know, abstracts the hardware away from your worries and lets you move forward.
Yeah, very cool. So as you can see, we've got it up on the screen now. It's not really doing much. It's kind of pulsing devices ready. But it shows that we've got Cordova up and running inside of our emulator. So
still looks sweet for doing...
It does look pretty sweet for doing pretty much nothing, right? Just doing the blinking. I think they're actually using the blinking tag for that as well. So
nice.
It's very funny. So yeah, that's Cordova up and running. Pretty simple, right?
So if we see this...
We're good.
We know we have the template there. We can move forward.
Yes, right. Exactly. So that's
set up.
Step number one is taken care of.
All right. Now enchant.
We're going to move on to enchant.
All right.
So I'm going to slide back into my slides just because we spent so much time making them, I might as well use them. So, again, we were talking about Enchant. It's a simple framework that we're going to be using, very flexible, has a lot of plugins. I was digging through the plugins. I didn't even realize how many plugins they had.
There are a lot. Now, one thing we should preface before we jump into Enchant is if you go online and start looking for documentation on Enchant, be warned, it's overseas development, so there's some English support.
They've been doing
so
a lot better with it.
It's starting to be spread around, and again, we're picking it up, I'm sure, so that'll help a little bit of a spotlight on it and build that development. But there, a lot of it is, again, Asian-influenced and so on, and, you know...
It's built for the JRPGs.
It is. It really...
You can really feel that.
That was the idea behind it. You can feel that, and therefore, most of the documentation is not necessarily readable to North Americans and so on, but they're working on that.
Yeah, exactly. The main, like, meat and potatoes, if you will, is there, right? Yeah. It's when you start getting into, like, the more obscure plugins and features of it like that, you might have a little bit of issue. But I found that the forms were really well moderated.
Yes, and so, there are some other good examples out there of doing various different things. In
exactly, already, yeah. So. If you do a quick Bing search, I'm sure you'll find a lot about Enchant, so definitely cool. So to get started, we need to download Enchant. So the version that we've decided to use in this one is the newest version that they had available at the time, which is version 0.8.1. So you can actually download that directly from the Enchant website. Mm-hmm. And again, we need to extract it, put it in a folder where you can find it. At the end of the day, it makes things a lot easier on us. Okay, so once we've got it downloaded, we're going to extract it. And now what we're going to do is we're going to go into Visual Studio and we're going to take a look at how we're going to bring this file in. And this is the same for every file, so I thought it would be kind of neat to kind of show it to you this way as opposed to, you know, dragging and dropping it
right in,
right? So yep, we'll do it this way. So I'm going to go back into Visual Studio. And I'm going to go to my JS folder, which is nice. They've got the hierarchy already set up for us.
Right, so that's already, again, in the template.
Yeah,
you pretty easy. You have to look for it. It should be there under your WW folder. Should be your JavaScript folder. Your
exactly. JS folder. So once we select that, we're going to right-click on it. We're going to go to Add Existing Item, sorry.
Correct.
And when we pop this up, we're going to go to that place where we stuck it. So for me, it was on the desktop.
For those who love shortcut commands, I believe it's Shift-Alt-A. Once you have the
throwing out the
selected,
pro tips.
Right?
Look at that.
Those keyboard warriors I support.
Awesome. So inside of the Enchant folder, we're going to go into our build, which is basically the already compiled versions that we're going to need. And you'll see here we have Enchant. There's Enchant.min, which is actually a minimized version. So if you're worried about, you know, the size of your binary at the end, you might, and you're not using all the features of Enchant, you might get away with using the minimum version.
Right.
But in our case, we just opted to use the vanilla version of Enchant. So we select that, we click Add, and there we go. Enchant is now part of our system, and anything we call an Enchant will now show up.
Okay.
Pretty simple, eh?
That wasn't too bad.
No, not too hard. So what do you say we do that again for a plugin?
Sure.
Sound good?
Which one do we want to bring in?
Well, we're going to bring in our UI plugin so that we can do some cool stuff and get some neat features.
Every game has a UI.
Yeah, it's very important. And the cool thing about Enchant's UI is it has a lot of necessary features for if you're building mobile games, like on-screen buttons, directional pad, which we actually use,
right,
as well as there's some things like a health bar is included in there. They have
Yes.
So there's a lot of very cool stuff.
Things that fit for
an RPG.
RPG and what you're looking at will be basically in here for you to utilize.
So we're not using any of the specific stuff like that. We're using the directional pad and some buttons and stuff like that, but overall we're not using like the life bars and stuff. But the documentation around it's pretty
good. Next time.
Next time.
There you go.
So we're gonna go back here. I right clicked on my JavaScript folder. I'm going into existing item.
Shift Alt A.
And this time I'm still in my build folder, but this time I'm gonna go into my plugins folder. And look at all those plugins. Isn't that
might
amazing?
Be hard to read, but there are a lot.
Yeah, there is. I'm sure it's kind of hard to read on the screen right now. But like, we've got things like the Box2D physics engines in there.
Okay, very nice.
Right, we've got special things for, you know, doing sockets, so networking.
Okay,
it's got its own networking in there. There's even Twitter.
Oh,
right. You have a Twitter plugin right there. Yeah. So if you want to add some social media down the road.
Just thinking of a comment. But all right.
But the one we're going to select is UI.enchant. So this is the one that's going to give us all of our UI features.
Perfect.
So go ahead and click Add.
And then we're done.
That's it. That's pretty simple,
so we can
eh?
Utilize that. And again, what is in there? Well, you'd have to look. We're going to look it up, we're going to utilize it. But you can also look up the extra features in any of those plugins that are in there online.
Exactly.
To get an idea of at least what's there, and then start experimenting.
And I opened up the file here, the Enchant.js or UI.enchant.
You can zoom that code in there.
I'll zoom right in. There we go. That's nice and big, eh? So this basically just lists some of the features.
All right, so this is our UI. So we got D-pads, like you said, analog pads, buttons. Okay. Oh, three built-in themes, so I don't even have to do art. That's great for programmer art is not pretty, so that's
exactly.
Good.
You know, you got mutable text, which is awesome.
Yep.
Score labels, which is, you know, very useful for a video game.
Okay. The bar you were talking about.
Yeah, you got your life label, your bar, and virtual map. So if you wanted to have
virtual
like a little
map.
Yeah, so if you wanted to have a map up in the corner to let you know where you're walking,
okay.
It's all set up. Pretty cool.
That'd be good. That'd be good. Yeah.
And they do have some pretty good documentation actually in the file on how to use it.
All in English.
All in English.
Well, that's
yes. Very handy for us English speakers anyway. All right, great. So let's go back over here. I showed you all that. So I guess the next step, since we've got everything kind of imported, is we want to start modifying the template.
Right.
Right, so I guess our first step in modifying the template is we got to rip out the stuff that we don't need.
Sure.
Right?
Sometimes there's always some pruning to be done. I mean, they are working with very general case, this will help everybody do whatever, so we might have to take out little bits and pieces we don't need.
Exactly. So what we're going to do is we're going to go in and we're going to remove some of the files that come pre-stubbed in. So in our case, we want to remove the index.css, which is a cascading style sheet. So okay. For you web devs out there, you'll know what I'm talking about. Game devs might not know.
But don't worry.
Don't worry. We'll cover a little bit. We'll cover a little bit about it. We're not going to go too in depth in that because yeah. It doesn't have too much usage in our template. But yeah, definitely worth reading up on in the future.
Right.
And then we're going to remove the index.js files because we're going to be replacing it with our own anyway.
Right.
So we're just going to remove that for the time being. And then after that, we're going to open up the HTML file and replace it with some text inside.
Okay.
So I've got the text in the code, but I think it would be a little bit better if we just jumped into Visual Studio and took a look.
Yeah.
So how about I show them how to rip out the code, and
yep.
Then you show them what we got to put in the HTML.
That sounds good.
Sound good? All right. So I'm going to jump back over into Visual Studio. And like I said, the first thing we want to do is start to remove a couple of the files. We'll start with the CSS files. So all I'm going to do is I'm going to select the index.css, and I'm just going to hit the delete button.
And it warns you.
It warns you, are you sure you want to delete this? In this case, I'm pretty sure. So I'm going to go ahead and hit OK. And then we're going to want to remove one more file, and that is the index.js file. So inside of our JS, see, I had my dropdown already open there.
Just
so
inside www.
Yeah, so inside of www, inside of our JS folder, you'll see the folder or the file index.js. Click on that, and I'm going to nuke that as well.
All right.
And gone. So that's getting rid of the stub code.
Right. Cleaned up what we don't necessarily need because we're going to replace it with some other stuff anyways.
Yeah. So why don't you fire up the HTML5, the index.html file, and we'll walk through basically what we're going to add to that file. It's basically a brand new file, so I'll do this. I'll show them the original.
Sure. You can show them the original.
Yeah. So this is just the original. A lot of stub and code.
Yeah. Zoom it up
for them a little bit. Yeah.
You have to do it on every file, unfortunately.
Oh.
But
that's okay. I don't mind. So there's a lot of licensing at the very beginning, you know. But then we just have, you know, your basic setup for an HTML5 or HTML application. So what we're going to do is actually a lot of this is content that we'll reuse again, but we're basically going to remove all the divs and some of their scripts, and we're going to go ahead and add our own.
Okay. Yep.
So go ahead and fire that up and show them
sure.
What our new one looks like.
Sure, over mine, and we've got different color coding going on here so you know who you're looking at. So this is the modified file. We've just taken out the license part just really to save room for what we want to show. I can pretty much almost fit it on one screen here now.
I did my best.
Yeah. And again, it's nice to not remove licensing when it's somebody else's licensing.
True.
It was just removed in this case for more of showing you
more
a clean
space,
file.
Yes.
This is really the parts we need in the file. So
and nobody wants to hear us go through legalese anyway.
No, that's right. That's a different scope of a different topic. Okay, so here we got our RPG template as a title, and you could change that to whatever you wanted. And of course, because it's a title in your head tag, it'll appear in your browser bar. If your browser still has a browser bar nowadays, some browsers are phasing that out and making it disappear. Won't mention any. And then we got our body tag. And inside our body tag, that's where we're going to include the files that we need to build our game. And you can already see that here is Enchant and Cordova JS files, which we've brought in. Here we have our UI Enchant map.js, which is that plugin we brought in. And then we're going to add a game and a map.js eventually. Again, this is the finished production code that we're looking at here for this little
series. And since we're adding those files pretty much right off the hop,
right,
you can pretty much get away with going ahead and coding that in.
Yeah,
at this
you can
point.
Just write them in. I mean, if it can't find a JavaScript file, it'll
throw an error.
And it won't stop your website from working,
exactly.
Of course, because the browsers are pretty resilient that way. It'll just move on and warn you that, hey, I don't know what this is or where it is.
So you want to talk a little bit about what the metadata is up there at the top? So we have,
sure.
You know, obviously our content type is HTML, and we're using a
right.
character set of UT8, which is basically just setting it up, letting it know how to render
and
what we're about to present.
And on top of that, this doc type definition just allows other websites and the browsers and other tools that you use to know what version you're using. Now, we're using HTML5,
mm-hmm.
But HTML is actually the
default now.
The default for meaning HTML5 now because of when this doc type tag came in and all the other kinds of stuff. So really, if you were using something before HTML5, you'd be more specific. But
yeah.
In this case, HTML is fine for what we're putting there. The metadata itself, meta tags, again, they're not tags that any viewer would see of a website or any of the content in case, again, you are a game developer but not a web developer. Now we're switching sides here. We're going to talk to you for a bit. The meta tags is for information for things like web crawlers to figure out what's on this site and why it would, what keywords to give to it.
Mm-hmm.
You could also do things like that. And what we've done in here is we've done some things to let the browsers know how to react to this website.
Yeah, so I see some scaling in there.
Right. For example, we have initial scale and maximum scale equal to 1 over here. Now, I'm sure if you have a phone and you've played around or a tablet and you've played around on the internet, you can double tap or triple tap or pinch to zoom or whatever, and the website basically would, you know, just pulse in like that on you and you can see the content and then it would pulse back out if you undid the action. What happens is sometimes those devices have a default scale set to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it might start already zoomed in or already zoomed out 3 times, trying to get the whole normal website that you would have been viewing on a computer onto your phone so that you can then zoom into the area you want. And we want to make sure our game always looks the same every time across all browsers. So that is sort of what we are trying to enforce here, is to let the browser, configure how the user can scale or if he can.
Yeah, so we're saying don't let him scale.
Right.
Set the initial scale to 1.
Yes.
The maximum scale is only going to be 1. So
right.
No pinch to zoom, basically.
Right, that's
what
we're trying to stop. No double tap to zoom, no pinch to zoom, anything like that.
Yeah.
So that you will see the game and its interface and what you should, and not accidentally lose track of it or double click thinking you can kill a guy and it pops in there and now you can't see what's going on, right?
Exactly.
It's those game features that get frustrating in a browser, because browsers weren't necessarily designed for game development or for playing games, and they were designed to view documents.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, double tap, zoom, great. Now I can read the words I couldn't see, or I could drag and highlight, or I could drag just to pan around. And we want to disable a lot of those features in a game environment because we have control of the camera, we're feeding you the UI, all the visuals are the right size
already.
We're
control freaks.
Well, yeah, there's that too. I mean, everybody wants their character customized just as they see fit, right? So that's what we're doing. That's really what we're using the meta tags for, and that's why that one's labeled as viewport, and we've listed all of those options there.
And then
and
the
so
one underneath
on.
The MS application, tap highlight, we're basically saying don't highlight where the person's pressed on the screen.
Right, because that obstructs their view again of what they're trying to play or interact with or whatever. We know they're tapping the screen, they know they're tapping the screen, and we're trying to clean up the visuals a bit. Because we're probably going to add our own visuals, like, oh, you selected the guy, and we'd highlight him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we don't want that pulse of the ring
yeah.
or the wavy pulse on some other devices and so on to be there, and that's what we're trying to disable, in this case specifically for Microsoft.
So depending on your application, you might want to modify this a little bit, right?
Right.
And play around with it.
Yeah, depending on who you're aiming for and things like that, there are some specialty meta tags that you'll be looking for.
But the ones that we put in here are generally, we're trying to target a lot of different a wider range of devices, so we try to go pretty default with everything.
And again,
here.
If you find one, like there will be new devices released every day, right,
mm-hmm.
in the coming future, and you find one that suddenly has some new behavior or works slightly different because they've got an OS upgrade or something, you just have to go out, dig around, search for the meta tags that configure or block out whatever feature it is that you're suffering from in your game, right?
Trying to suppress or trying to add.
Right. So that's what you're looking for. You're basically saying, you know, HTML5 meta tag that suppresses blah, whatever the feature is on this device, this phone, this OS. And then hopefully you'll find the information you need and you can just pop it in there as
well. Awesome. So underneath of that, we were talking about where we're actually loading in our scripts, right? So we have our Cordova, we have our Enchant, we have UI, our game and our map.
Right.
And basically all we're saying here is we're just writing language that tells the interpreter, hey, by the way, this file that you're looking for is going to be of type JavaScript.
That's right. So it's a script tag. You tell it the type of script, in this case JavaScript, written in plain text. It's not encoded or zipped up or something like that. And then what the name of the file is. And then you close your script tag and you're good to go. And this one up here, we haven't talked about this one yet. It's a style sheet, again, that CSS, that cascading style sheet. It's written in plain text in that language, CSS. And it what it's going to do for us is it's going to allow us to state how some of the visuals are going to be for our game. I might as well show that off.
Actually, yeah, it's a good segue. So what we need to do is we need to actually add our own CSS because we removed the one that came with the default template, right? So what we're going to do, and Brian's already got this done, so I'll tell you what, I'll jump onto mine since I don't have it done, and I'll actually show you the step. It's very, very simple, but might as well show it off.
Yep.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into my www
folder
again. I'm going to select my CSS. Right now, there's nothing inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
If I right-click and go to Add New Item, so instead of existing item, we're going to add a new item.
Right.
And it's going to pop up. Now, this is the one quirk about using Cordova that I really wanted to highlight. When you're using Cordova and you're writing in JavaScript, because Cordova is written primarily, like the overlaying wrapper is written in C#.
Right.
Automatically, my IDE Visual Studio thinks, well, you want a C#.
Same
file.
Reason the template ended up in that.
Exactly, right? So I'm going to show you a very neat little trick and very simple little trick. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go down here and we want to call our CSS game.css.
Right.
So I'm going to type game.css.
Missed an E.
Did I miss an E? So I should be looking at my screen and not the screen that's projecting. So I got game.css, and if I click add, we've now created a CSS. Oh, you know what? I did that wrong. Let's try that again, shall we?
It's always good to see it wrong once.
Yeah, you know what? It's nice to see someone else make mistakes right on live television. It's great. So I'm going to go to add new item. But this time, I forgot the very important step. I got to click a code file.
Okay.
Right, so that way it doesn't stub in the XAML and everything else. Before it thought I was trying to add a page.
Right.
So this time I'm actually just going to add a code file. So by default, it would be a blank C# code file.
Right.
But in our case, we don't want that. And actually, this kind of helps out a little bit. I just got to add an S to the end.
And now we have a CSS file.
And there we go. Now we have our game.css, and you'll notice that it's actually highlighted as a CSS file.
Right, and if you open it up.
Yeah, I got nothing in there yet. Yeah. So let's go back over to Brian's computer and see all the fun stuff that we want to stick in there.
All right, so here is what we're putting in our game CSS file. Now, again, some of you may be familiar with doing CSS work and some of you may not. These are basically, again, the tags from HTML5 right over here, right? Here's our body tag. And there we got an HTML tag. So basically what we're doing in our CSS file is we are giving the style and the color or the shape or the background color or features like that, the text size, the width and height you want for anything that has that tag name.
Mm-hmm.
We could go into more depth, but we don't need to for that. So things like we want a width and height of a certain size for our game window. Some of these other features, there's, again, MS content zooming.
So we're trying to suppress the fact that you can zoom and pinch and stuff like that. Because with our game file, we don't want you moving around the game board. We want you focused on the game. We don't want you pinching and zooming and changing the dimensions, right?
And some games, might be able to cheat.
Exactly.
Zoom in if you're looking for Where's Waldo or some crazy thing like that, and you can find little guys in
there. I could think that would be bad in like a real-time strategy, right, where you can see the entire board by zooming out.
Yeah, you zoom out, now you can see the whole army coming.
Yeah, no fog of war, just the entire army.
That's right. So, and then things like our background color for our game. And this is, again, is written in hexadecimal, so it's a number system.
Yeah,
goes from
but you can write it in
F.
our GB or anything like that.
You can write it in other forms, and that's just the one we've picked because a lot of HTML5 developers are just used to that color code. You can go into Photoshop and just spin around in the field.
Oh, yeah, and that's right, and it spits out which ones.
And it'll show you those. So people have probably seen this if they've
There's a lot of websites out there, too, that do the same thing.
There are color picker websites that'll let you do the same thing, so you know what the code is, and you just type it in for whatever color you want. And, of course, margin is basically the outside area around these tags, and by default, it's usually not zero. Mm-hmm. Because most things shouldn't be crammed up against something else.
Exactly.
But we actually want that border to go away as much as possible because we want to use all of the device's screen space.
Exactly.
So that's why we've set margin to zero. And there's, again, that'll help with that.
And we set our width and our height to default sizes. And the reason for this is there's a lot of different devices out there.
Right.
And we were concerned that if we didn't set this, we would end up with scaling issues on different devices, right? So if we set this, we have a default scale and it'll be presented in that format on every device.
So yeah, you might have a bigger screen and it only takes up a portion of your device screen or whatever. For simplification, basically, we just chose to go with a fixed screen, and we can always talk about scalability and all that kind of stuff later on a different thing. That can take a couple.
Take a few days.
Yeah, with all the finesse of every single device and every single screen format, then you got 16:9, 4:3, you got 5:4, all those as well, not just different pixel densities.
You have a lot of different form factors there.
And in gaming, I mean, that affects your control. It affects your preciseness, especially if you're touching the device and system.
If you've got on-screen controls, all of a sudden that becomes an issue, because if you've got it set at a certain spot on there and you change the format, maybe you go from 4:3 to 16:9, that's going to actually move the controls.
Or stretch them if you're not
scaling. And if you've done probably one of the worst things that you could do and hard code the values into it, you're going to have some fun.
The bane of every junior programmer, hard coding values, yes.
Every time I go to hard code something, I hear the little voice of Brian in the back of my head saying, don't do that. That's not right.
You know this will bite you later.
Yeah, exactly.
So we just picked a screen size and a format that we were happy with. It was big enough to show off. It worked well in the emulators we were playing around with and on the devices we were playing around with. And that's really how we just came up with it for now as a demonstration purposes.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much it for this file.
Well, what about the top there? We had some specifics.
Sorry.
So we had a specific around. Yeah, so this is the Microsoft specific for a viewport. And basically all we're trying to do, again, is we're trying to suppress the zooming.
Right.
Right. So what we've done here is we've actually changed the zoom from 1 to 2 because on the MS device, like the Microsoft devices, it tends to have a 1.5 scale, I believe, is the issue. So we just said, okay, you know what? Scale everything to 2. Right. And it'll fit properly, and
you won't get any pixel
blurring. You won't get any pixel,
and things like that. So we can get pixel perfect art.
So if you were to target another device, there might be specific tags that you want for that device.
Correct.
Right. So that's where you might have to do a little bit of coding when you're putting it on different devices, just to make it fit and act normally. Right.
But again, it allows you that flexibility of, oh, I found an edge case on this one device that was built 1 year sometime along. That somebody important of me owns or something, and you can just, fix that problem.
Exactly. But, at the end of the day, Cordova is cross-platform for that reason. And you are going to bump into the little odd cases where that didn't work on a certain device, but it did work on another device. And, it's the problem that every cross-platform developer has, right? There's always little things that you have to take care of at the end. We can do as much as we can to abstract that, but you have to do a little legwork every once in a while.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
So that's basically our CSS. We've done a setup. We've got our Cordova template installed, so we can fire up that now. We've got our Visual Studio project together. We've got Enchant imported. We've got the UI plugin imported. We've set up our HTML. We've covered a lot in a short period of time there. That's a lot of content to go through. So I think it's about time for a break. Right. Yeah, so let's take a 10-minute break, and when we come back, we'll dive into actually building the game.
That's the best part.